This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. A fledgling nonprofit is spreading its wings in Wheeling. Glynis Board spent some time recently with founders of Grow Ohio Valley to hear about the major steps they're taking to contribute to the revitalization of Wheeling.
Here we are on what looks like a farm. What sounds like a farm, but we're in the city under a highway overpass. It's called Farm 18 because it's on 18th Street in Wheeling. Danny Swan, co-founder of a fledgling nonprofit called Grow Ohio Valley, describes the scene.
There's a giant highway overpass that's that kind of forms the background to the garden, and it's the reason why the garden exists. This overpass was the reason they tore down the houses that used to be here on this block and left this big empty field. Which we've turned into a mini farm that has chickens and raspberries and blackberries and all kinds of vegetables, anything you can name. Basically with a purpose of growing food in the East Wheeling community, so getting fresh food into the neighborhood and teaching other people how to grow stuff.
Farm 18 has been growing for about 5 years now. Last year, the acre plot produced an estimated $10,000 worth of organic produce, sold in farm stands and distributed throughout the community. This year, Swan says, with a lot of volunteer effort and resources, they hope to produce 20,000. And again, all of these organic vegetables are being grown on top of filled-in foundations of a former neighborhood.
We realized that we couldn't till this ground like you normally would in a garden. You can't dig because of the houses that used to be here. A couple inches down is all rubble. So we started using this no-till style of gardening where you're just layering things from the top down, putting down mulches and killing the grass by using newspaper instead of a rototiller. So basically smothering the grass and then mulching all the time. And it was really amazing to see over the years the soil quality start to improve and the crop production, you know, rivaling that of the best soils in the world here on, you know, like abandoned urban rubble. It's been really cool.
Farm 18 looks like a pretty intense operation, but it's just one of the projects Grow Ohio Valley is tackling. A handful of volunteers are spearheading a group of ambitious projects that are all designed to bring healthy food into Wheeling and teach kids what that food is and how it's grown. And they've made some serious headway. In addition to Farm 18, there are about 20 small community gardens growing in Wheeling now, where 5 years ago, there were just many empty lots in neighborhoods known as drug and crime hotspots.
And it's really, really true that if you build farms in neighborhoods and a lot of good food, the value of everything else goes up around it. And that's happened time and time again. That's not a whimsical statement. There are many, many examples of that happening.
Executive Director of Grow OV, Ken Peralta. A filmmaker with an MBA from Harvard Business School, Peralta blew in from New York City several years ago with a mission to explore food and sustainability. Lucky Wheeling. Since he got here, he's co-authored a Benedum-funded study that outlined the region's potential to develop a local food economy. Now armed with blueprints of how to build healthy, sustainable, economically strong communities, Grow Ohio Valley is fundraising and putting their ideas in motion. The fundraising is going pretty well. So far, they've landed some key grants from the state, local foundations and institutions, as well as individual donors to the tune of a couple $100,000. Most recently, the Schenck Charitable Trust awarded them their largest grant yet, $150,000 to fund these efforts. Peralta says they're basically making offers that are really just too good to pass up.
You know, it's like the triple bottom line returns. It's the financial returns. It's the returns to the environment, because if you're building, if you're growing food, you're enhancing fertility and you're building kind of mini ecosystems. So there's big benefits there. And then also the health and well-being of the people, both through eating better food, as well as getting people active in their gardens and thinking about what they eat. You know, thinking about, what I put in my body changes the way that I feel.
Peralta is excited that their plans are set in motion, and those plans encompass more than Farm 18 and the urban community gardens, much more. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
Tomorrow, Glynis takes us on a tour of some of the projects that Grow Ohio Valley is undertaking. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:38. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly cloudy today with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s. Rain and thunderstorms could be heavy at times tonight and tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit wvdrs.org for employer services.
There are several organizations in West Virginia that advocate on behalf of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Now, a new center on North Eisenhower Drive in Beckley hopes to encourage communication between them and the gay population of the southern part of the state. Jared Klein has more.
Why do I want him to have to move away? He's got something that he can share with me. I'm sure there's something that I can know about Mike that I'm going to want to know.
That's the voice of a concerned mother. Her son is Mike. He's just one of the half a dozen people crammed into a meeting room in Beckley on this summer evening. But the woman, who wishes to only go by Catherine, is the mother of a self-identifying LGBT teenager in southern West Virginia.
Why does the state want to throw out productive people? We have a hard enough time with the image in this state. You've got smart people. You're going to make them leave. You're going to push them out when this state needs educated, competent people.
Most people view it as a dead end, though, too. There's nothing here. Well, the reason that they perceive it as nothing here is because there is no support. They don't know where to look
right.
For it.
That's Mike Adkins, the man Catherine was referring to. He's just one of the people who want to see a change for the LGBT population of West Virginia. He's one of the co-founders of the new West Virginia Gay and Lesbian Community Center in Beckley. Rob Dunlap is the president of the organization. He also serves as a lawyer and an adjunct professor at Concord University. He hopes the new center can incorporate different LGBT populations around the state.
We really have a strong commitment to seeing Beckley being a more conducive place. I mean, frankly, there's not a focus only on young gay West Virginians or older gay West Virginians. It's something we're reaching out widespread across the strata.
This includes working with organizations such as PFLAG, which stands for Parents, Families, Friends, and Allies United with LGBT People. Fairness West Virginia and West Virginia Equal, that he claims only identify with what he calls niche groups. Dunlap thinks Beckley seemed like the ideal location because it is within a 45 to 50-minute drive from West Virginia's largest cities. Homelessness among LGBT youth is one issue the group plans on tackling. The National Coalition for the Homeless reports that 20% of the homeless population in the country are so because they've been rejected by their families. Hannah Barker, vice president of the Beckley Center, says she knows of this firsthand.
On a personal experience, many of my friends that I've had have come out to their family, and they have been kicked out of their houses. Stemming off of that, many of their friends have had the same experience.
Not only that, but Barker says LGBT youth have been known to skip school because they're bullied, affecting their academic future. The center wants to better educate the schools and colleges around the state, but Barker realizes some of the roadblocks of acceptance from public schools.
I feel that it is going to be a challenge, but ultimately I hope that we can help the schools, kind of give them information, help them understand, hey, this is a really big issue that's happening, and it's really important for young people to have the resources they need so that they can continue going to school and have basically the normal life that any teenager would have.
Another advocacy mission the new group hopes to take on is HIV prevention. The West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources reports that there are just under 2,000 people living with HIV and AIDS in the state. The center was recently given 5,000 OraQuick testing units with the hopes of providing free confidential testing. Mike Adkins has two friends with HIV and says that most West Virginians are in the dark about the disease.
People here really have no information of HIV. They're not educated in it. They're still fearful of what it means, thinking, oh, God, I can catch it by touching.
Adkins knows firsthand. He's been diagnosed with HIV himself.
There's nothing available in this area. You find out, you're thrown to the wolves, basically, and you have to fend for yourself because the information, the counseling, it's not available. It's something you deal with alone because it has been my experience. All the people you trust are going to turn their back on you very quickly.
To provide a sense of community for the newly diagnosed people, the center hopes to provide post-diagnostic testing. Most public health departments across the state currently offer HIV testing. So the question bears asking, why stay in West Virginia? Here's Rob Dunlap's answer.
Really, we're happy to be here. We're a productive part of the community. We're the folks that already work with you side by side in your different jobs, but we look after our own. And we have a community that hasn't always been present in Beckley, in Appalachia. And the gay and lesbian community needs to be our own shepherds. We need to look after and take care of one another.
This is a sentiment that the other members of the Beckley Center seem to agree on. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jerry Klein in Beckley.
And you can find out more about the West Virginia Gay and Lesbian Center in Beckley by visiting our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Public Theater is getting ready to open in Morgantown for its 30th season. It began because one man who moved to West Virginia saw a lack of professional theater companies when he arrived. Founder Ron Ione says he might retire soon. He talked to Beneduccio about the theater, what it's tried to accomplish, and how he'd like to be remembered.
I started the theater 30 years ago in a parking lot at Sheridan Lakeview Resort and Conference Center. That's what it was called at that time. And the reason, one of the reasons I started it is because I grew up with summer stock theater, an area in central New York. I'm from Auburn, New York, near Syracuse, near Skinny Atlas, New York, where they had a lyric theater in a tent, and they used to bring in big stars like Carol Channing, Bill Hayes, people like that. And I thought when I came to West Virginia that there would be a professional theater here, but there wasn't. So I thought it might be a good idea to go to the resort. They were building townhouses then, which were timeshares. And this would be a great amenity for the people that were going to be at the timeshares. The goal I had for this theater was to present deeply entertaining shows. That's one major goal. They have a cultural and economic impact on the area. Third is to open the window to musical theater.
West Side Story has a very special place in your heart. Has that been the most common recurring show over the years that's been done? Or do you think, is there another one that's been done probably the most over the 30 years?
West Side Story, we've done that, I think, four times. We've also done South Pacific. It's three times. Chorus Line. We've done that four times. 42nd Street, we've done that over. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor, we've done that maybe four times. We bring back those shows because we do a survey at the end of the season. We ask people what they would like to see. And then what we do is maybe put in there one or two shows that we think can help educate. You know, the arts enrich people's lives. I have probably, in the 30 years, gone to the majority of shows every night. And I love it because I am transformed. I'm transformed to another world, and for 2 hours I can forget budget, tickets, marketing, fundraising. And that's what I hope we do for people when they come to our shows.
Talking about legacy and what you've really done for this town and for this state with this theater, at some point, I'm sure that crosses your mind when you think about what you want your legacy to be.
I hope that people will remember me and the theater for the Broadway shows we brought in and for the shows they came to and they enjoyed. I hope that's part of my legacy, how much we have educated young people to enjoy our shows. So maybe when they get older, they'll come back because we have to be involved in audience development.
And you've also done in the past some dramatic plays too.
Streetcar Named Desire, Owl Town, and we want to continue doing that. Because those are very challenging, but we're educating our musical theater audiences to appreciate other kinds of drama. And, you know, Also, I've always been really deeply grateful. I had an opportunity to do New Place. And some people forget this. During the 90s, in the early part of the 2000, we produced plays at the State Theater in Uniontown. We produced a play called Streets of Gold, about the immigrants that came to the area, about the mining wars. So I would hope that would be also part of my legacy, is the New Place. And I'm hoping that we could improve on the educational side by starting an academy where we can be educating people to appreciate musical theater and acting, dancing, singing. And we're working on that this year. That would be the final part of the dream I had in 1985, is have an academy attached to us that we can use our professional directors, choreographers, to teach young people. So we're also building a population of musical theater people in West Virginia. We have very many talented young people. And I hate seeing them go to other places. And I do love having people from University of Michigan. I love people from Point Park College, CMU. But we should have more people from West Virginia on our stage.
That's West Virginia Public Theater founder Ron Ione speaking with Ben Natuccio. You can learn more about this year's season and find out a schedule of performances on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.